DW Africa Link. Welcome to DW's Africa Link program this Monday, the 10th of September 2018. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I am Zipora Nyambura. As usual, we are live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Feel free to drop us a comment on the stories we are covering.
Coming up on the program, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni warns against foreign interference in the country's politics days after an opposition leader called for the United States to suspend military aid.
The NGOs give money to some of our youth to burn tires on the roads, throw stones, to commit arson, to rig elections.
Zimbabwe's President Emmerson Mnangagwa has sworn in his new cabinet that has some new young faces.
We have to make it clear to the government that they have to keep an eye on us, the youths. Because as long as we don't have something to do, we are going to die in the drug zones.
These are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But before we bring you the details, let's listen to World News in brief.
DW News.
I am Kai Dombach with the DW News. Sweden's general election ended in a stalemate. No coalition gained a majority in parliament. Sweden's far-right Sweden Democrats gained the most votes on the night, while Prime Minister Stefan Löfven's center-left Social Democrats lost 13 seats in parliament, their worst result in a century. Johan Forssell, a Swedish moderate party spokesman, said Sweden will hold its breath on what's going to happen next.
We'll see what happens. 4 years ago, they were underestimated in the exit polls. They gained, I think, 3 percentage points. At the same time, I think during the last week or so, I've talked to numerous people that have been supporting the moderate party before and perhaps said that they were going to vote for the Sweden Democrats. And many of them have felt like, okay, this is a very tight election. It's probably better to return back to the moderate party. So we'll see what happens.
Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir dissolved his cabinet in response to the economic crisis in his country. Al-Bashir said Montaz Musa, the Minister of Irrigation and Electricity, is now the country's prime minister. Under the new government, there will be 21 ministries instead of 31 as the country tries to deal with record-high inflation and a hard currency shortage. At least 6 people were killed in a suicide car bomb attack in Mogadishu's Hodan district. Al-Shabaab claimed responsibility for the attack, which also injured 16. The car plowed through the gates of the district's administrative headquarters before it exploded, causing the building to collapse. This news comes to you from Deutsche Welle, Germany's international public broadcaster. 7 people were injured in a knife attack in Paris on Sunday evening. Police ruled out terrorism in the incident, and one witness says he saw the perpetrator several times before the attack.
Yes, it's a man I see every day. He's homeless. He smokes crack in the corner at Stalingrad metro station. I used to see him every day. He was normal, calm. And it's true that when I saw him carry a big knife yesterday, I called out for help and they jumped on him.
Armed gunmen attacked the headquarters of Libya's national oil company, killing 2 and injuring 10. Different groups were blamed for the attack, including the so-called Islamic State, as well as forces for Libya's UN-backed government. The UN mission in Libya condemned the attack, and the company head said the attack had no impact on oil production or operations. The German government said it was in talks with its allies about a potential military role in the Syrian conflict. A government spokesman said German airstrikes would only take place in Syria if there was another chemical attack in the country. If Germany joins alongside the U.S., it would fight against Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, who is supported by the Russian government. For more news and information, please visit our website at dw.com. I'm Kai Dombach.
This is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios in Bonn, Germany. I am Zipora Nyambura.
And I'm Isaac Mugabe. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Many of you are waving at us like Loving Ben May, who says, good job, guys. And Ismail Saliu Koroma says he's listening from Freetown, that's Leon. Richard Ford Guy is also waving to us. And also Paul Kakande says hello, and so is Zardin Omar. Many thanks for that. Now, Uganda's president, Yoweri Museveni, has warned against foreign interference in the country's politics days after an opposition call for the United States to suspend military aid over the government's human rights record.
Museveni also accused some unnamed foreign countries of seeking to influence the nation's politics by funneling assistance to the opposition through non-governmental organizations. From Kampala, Alex Gita sent this report.
In a televised address to the nation, Uganda's President Yoweri Museveni accused external forces of trying to foment trouble by funding his political opponents and in a bid to undermine the country's image abroad.
The NGOs give money to some of our youth to burn tires on the roads, throw stones, to commit arson, to rig elections. Sometimes our youth go into these criminal projects because they want money. They do not enjoy doing this. I have this information on good authority.
Before Museveni's address, the government had announced that they were investigating NGOs and their source of funding. Government claims the NGOs are promoting foreign interests. But Richard Sewakiryanga, the executive director of the NGO Forum, said the president's remarks were worrying.
I think that accusation in itself is an empty one, and it could be one that is being propagated by those that would like to sow seeds of discontent between civil society organizations in this country and the president of this country. The work that we do, which is to defend rights, to promote better service delivery, to promote better governance of this country, I think is legitimate work. It is constitutional work, and it is work that we don't think should lead anybody to think that somebody is fighting this country. To say that, for example, we bring in money to disrupt people is in itself totally, totally wrong.
Museveni also attacked the media, both local and international, saying they are biased against his administration.
You only report the negative. You don't report the positive. This country does not belong to you. It belongs to us. You have no right to misrepresent our country.
It is not the first time the media is facing Museveni's wrath. His government has banned and sometimes closed down radio and TV stations for hosting opposition figures. Robert Sempala of the Human Rights Network for Journalists said the president has been unfair to the media.
We believe that there is a sheer lack of appreciation for the role and importance the media plays in a society. Because it's also wrong to make a blanket statement against the media. But we also see the president trying to arm twist the media to only give audience to government and not voices of dissent.
Certain media houses have been warned that they will lose their licenses unless they tow the government line and promote its policies.
Alex Sita there with that report from Kampala. On our Facebook page, Kivumbi Dungu in Kampala says, "People power, our power." That's the slogan for the opposition Zipporah from Bobby Wine himself.
Yeah, of course, that's very popular.
And then Idris Dodd says, "The Ugandan president is overruling." So we have more comments, Zippy, coming in on this particular story.
Of course, and we've gotten even enough of them today. Itoro Orok says, "Yes, their meddling is no lie, but it should give Uganda the chance to know the reign of another manager."
Catherine Ann the Great says the only one meddling in Ugandan politics is you, Mr. President Museveni.
Yeah, and Peter Small says, so the USA provides military funding to a dictator. What have they intended to achieve if not his long stay?
Keep the debate flowing on our page, DW Africa, and tell us what options do you think that President Museveni can take and engage the opposition. We would like to hear from you. Now, the big story making headlines here in Europe is Sweden, which has now become the newest nation in Europe to be influenced by neo-Nazis and far-right groups after they recorded major gains during the weekend election. Both main political blocs failed to secure a majority in the general election.
The ruling center-left Social Democrats and their allies secured 40.6%, a slight edge over the center-right alliance at 40.3%. The populist Sweden Democrats have surged into third place and hope to become kingmaker of any ruling coalition, a scenario both centrist blocs are finding hard to stomach. Tabia Koppelt has more.
After the general elections in Sweden, neither the centre-left bloc nor the centre-right bloc can come up with a coalition strong enough to build the required majority. On the other hand, the country's far-right anti-immigration party, Sweden Democrats, gained more than 17% of the votes. While the big established parties promised that they won't be forming a coalition with Jimmy Åkesson, the Sweden Democrats party leader, he hopes that anytime soon they will come knocking.
Yes, we grew stronger and the two blocks are closing in. It is incredible even between the old blocks. Of course, that gives us the great potential of influence over both the decision on who will become prime minister and what that government will look like and how the politics will be run.
Still, there are more than 80% of the Swedish population who didn't vote for the Sweden Democrats. Some voters have now raised concerns about the results.
It's strange. It's not Swedish. It's something like non-democratic, I think. And it's really alarming. And it's a quite scary situation forward here in Sweden.
For now, Sweden has to wait for the 300,000 votes from Swedes living abroad and for some who gave their vote late. That number will be made public by Wednesday.
That is Tabia Gorpelt with that report.
And it was a report about the main story that is making headlines here in Europe, that is Sweden. Now let's go back to Africa, and it's in Zimbabwe where the first cabinet has been sworn in after the highly contested July 30th general elections amid high expectations to turn around the fortunes of the Southern African country. And like in the past, the new cabinet has been trimmed to 20 from 35 cabinet members, as was common practice during Robert Mugabe's era.
As Privilege Mushaniri reports from Harare, Mnangagwa did not include the opposition in his cabinet. Several members of the old guard were dropped in favour of new and fresh minds that have never featured anywhere in Zimbabwe's politics.
Now, therefore, I, Emmerson Mnangagwa, President of the Republic of Zimbabwe.
The stakes are high for the newly formed government that has new and renowned personalities. Notably is the new finance minister, a University of Oxford economics professor, Mutuli Ncube, and multi-Olympic medalist Kest Coventry, who will be heading the Youth, Sports, Arts and Recreation Ministry. Ordinary Zimbabweans who have suffered effects of a prolonged economic slump down for more than 20 years are expecting a huge transformation. And on the streets of the capital Harare, many want change.
So we've got a lot of good hope. So these guys should bring in fresh ideas since they are fresh into this particular type of job. So expect a lot of changes and they should get straight onto the work and they hit the ground running.
I think the chief economist should start by addressing the macroeconomic problem.
The new cabinet has been described as a departure from the past, with a mix of both young technocrats in different fields and the experienced old. Sibusiso Moyo, the foreign and international trade minister, says the country is eager to return to the family of nations after years of isolation.
We are looking forward to ending isolation of Zimbabwe from the international community and making it join, and so that the country can participate within the global affairs.
However, while the politicians think of the bigger picture, young people like Talent Jakachira, a shoemaker from Harare's oldest Seba Mbare, are making a huge appeal for the youth to be empowered.
We have to make it clear to the government that they have to keep an eye on us, the youths. Because as long as we don't have something to do, we are going to die in the drug zones, especially here in Mbare. Drugs are taking over. No youth is working.
As the sworn cabinet goes to work, hopes are that politics will not prevail over reason. The chance to turn around is now, hoping the ghosts of yesteryear, such as corruption and unchecked government expenditure, will not rise again.
Privilege Mushaniri with that report.
And as you've heard in that report, great expectations from especially the youth.
Yeah, that is good news for one.
Yeah, and we welcome your comments on our Facebook page, DW Africa, on the new leadership in Zimbabwe. Tell us what you think. Welcome back to the program. My name is Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura. We are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. We can see you, people who are writing to us, Ishmael Koroma there, and there is Lovelin Bey who is talking about Paul Biya. We have a lot coming up in the next 15 minutes. Chinese herbal medicine has been nicknamed Tsunami 100% and has been a massive hit now in Malawi.
I was suffering from a cold the very first time I used Tsunami 100%. I smeared it onto my nose, and to my surprise, the cold was gone.
So it's understandably clear the Chinese are not only taking up, you know, Africa in terms of business, but also in medicines.
And the name Tsunami. Will you take a medicine called Tsunami?
I'm looking forward to this report anyway.
Yeah, so before that, we head to Cameroon. And Cameroon says it has deployed additional troops to Bamenda following an attack by armed separatists on a passenger bus convoy that left one person dead and several others injured. The separatists were attempting to block access into and out of the northwestern region where they maintain there will be no election.
The attack is the latest in the restive region where English-speaking separatists have declared an independent state. Road and telecommunication engineers spent the better part of the day repairing the damages estimated to be worth millions of US dollars after the attack. Moki Kinzeka, our own in Cameroon, visited the scene of the attacks this morning and filed this report.
Engineers busy at Akum, a village situated 10 kilometers from Bamenda, on which is the only road linking the English-speaking northwest to French-speaking regions of Cameroon. Apart from attacking and burning buses, separatists destroyed communication lines, leaving people with no telephone or internet connection. Telecommunication technician Ale Solomon says they did that to stop any possible telephone calls or messages that could make the military to trace them during the operation.
When we came this morning, we did our measurements and we saw that the fiber was broken at about 15.6 kilometers from Bamenda. All the other operators are affected here. Nextel, Orange, MTN, Camtel itself, everybody's affected.
Thomas Akom, head of a road construction company in the area, says the armed men also seized their equipment and set them ablaze.
My worker called me at the quarry where we grind the gravel and told me that the people just came in with guns and then told them to come and climb on the one truck. We took one machine plus the truck away from the quarry.
Amo Mezambos Agency, which mainly transports commuters in the region, says the attackers had warned them against collaborating with government troops. An official of the company, Jules Ngolap, explains.
They were saying Amumezam is a company transporting policemen and guys of B to Bamenda to disturb. So I don't know in which way.
Separatist groups have acknowledged responsibility for the attack on social media, saying they will not allow any bus to travel into or out of the region in a bid to stop the upcoming general elections in English-speaking region of Cameroon. They maintain they are a country called Ambazonia and will organize their own elections. For most of the commuters, like Elias Wara, the weekend events are still fresh in their minds.
When we arrived this spot, so the guys came and they told us that everybody should go down. And they had to take our ID card and then they asked us to bite it, that they don't want the green or yellow. And they asked us to kneel down. When the military men came, that is when the guys they escaped.
Governor Deben Chofo of the Northwest is calling for calm since the government has deployed more troops to arrest the attackers.
Government have taken necessary measures to secure not only Bamenda, but also the remoted areas. I also seize the opportunity to remind the security services instruction so far given to neglect nothing that can hinder the global security of the region of the nation. I would like to congratulate them for the difficult work they are doing, sometimes in difficult conditions.
That is Governor Deben Chofo of the Northwest Region in Cameroon. That report was compiled by Moki Kinzeka.
And on our Facebook page, we have a video of women in Cameroon crying for help as President Paul Biya's discreet war on Ambazonian separatists takes the lives of many people. And we asked you, why is the world turning a blind eye on this violence? Many of you were quick to answer that question, like Nyamba, who says, charity begins at home. I came to realize that not even African nations care about African affairs. Their youth would rather fight and die over Arsenal versus Man City, Bayern versus Barcelona, than caring about an African baby dying beside them. That's a strong one.
That is a very sad comment. I think it sums up. It says young people are not really
concerned about what's happening around them. Yeah.
And there's one here from Tanifon Siltrava who says the president is buying himself a private jet in China with taxpayers' money. And he says this is the height of evil.
Manu Boyut says they have all been paid not to see. It's difficult for a man to understand something when his salary depends on him not understanding it. Cryptic.
Wow. Sure. Yeah. And the last one here from Baya Jeremiah, who says, when you have leaders whose visions have expired and they have nothing to offer, the development of the citizens to that violence becomes the order of the day.
Many thanks for those comments. We still have much more for you, so don't go away.
Health check.
And now we head to Malawi. Chinese herbal medicine, as we know, has been rapidly penetrating many African countries. Those who use the Chinese herbs say they're not only cheap, but they're also readily available compared to conventional medicine.
And the herbal medicine that is making or turning heads in Malawi is called Tsunami 100%. It has become a boom, I can tell you, Zipora. The popular Chinese herb is said to heal nearly all kinds of ailments, including high blood pressure, ulcers, and burns. Our reporter Miriam Kaliza went out to investigate what this new drug that is said to heal over 100 ailments is all about. Take a listen.
Gift Male has been suffering from a persistent flu and cold for the past few days. He has taken all kind of medications to stop the flu, but it has not helped. At least until his friend who noticed and suggested a remedy, which is now popular herbal medicine in Malawi, called Tsunami. Male had to inhale and apply the green-looking liquid, which is said to have natural herbs. And true to its name, Tsunami, Male says it worked wonders.
I was suffering from a cold the very first time I used Tsunami 100%. I did not really believe I could get relief from herbal medicines, but I went ahead and bought it. I smeared it onto my nose, and to my surprise, the cold was gone. After the massive
herbalists are reaping from this newfound love for herbal medicine in Malawi. Dr. Ebede Ebede calls people to come see his samples. He tells me he has no doubt it is effective because he has had people come to buy more after using on various illnesses.
We know that it is effective because when customers buy our Tsunami, they always come back for more. They are often buying for other people or themselves. They also come with different testimonies saying the sickness they had before, be it a cold or a sore body part, among others, is perfectly fine after applying Tsunami 100%.
According to its leaflet, it is also effective on mosquito bites, nasal congestion, motion sickness in vehicles and ships, bruises and sprains, and muscle soreness. Malawi has a history of traditional medicinal use. Medical analysts also believe the new trend could also be attributed to high cost of health services and conventional medicine. Many people I spoke to bear witness that Tsunami healed their ailments, be it abdominal pains, sore gums, or headaches. But despite its magic effect, it has not been approved by the country's Pharmacy, Medicines and Poisons Board. Clifford Male, Drug Registration Officer, explains why.
Currently, no herbal product can claim to heal, treat, prevent any disease because no one has come to PMPB with scientific evidence, data to prove that his or her product can treat, cure or prevent a disease.
However, Minister of Health Atupele Muluzi says when the Pharmacy, Medicines and Poisons Bill passes at Parliament, it will determine how imported herbal medicine will be treated in the country.
There's a pharmacy, medicines and poisons board that deals with all medicines, especially those that are coming into the country. And of course, we're strengthening the legal regime around that for the management of such products, medical commodities that are coming in, whether traditional or the other medical commodities. So that is ongoing at the moment. And with the passage of the law that we hope to be passed in Parliament, that will strengthen that.
Malawi's Minister of Health, Atupelezi Muluzi. That report was compiled by Miriam Kaliza. And of course, you have also been giving us your feedback on that. Obiana Peter from Nigeria says, there's no such drugs in circulation in my country. And he says, if the herbs are good and capable of curing sicknesses, as said, then the Chinese should register and have the license to export them to the African states.
But Zipra, we have a user from Cameroon who says, I'm scared of Chinese medicine. If you see the kind of artificial products Chinese got involved in producing, it make me fear anything Chinese. I mean, he's just too scared, unless because of the fake products or maybe the not so long life products that they manufacture. Anyway, just keep the bit flowing, and as usual, the forum is our Facebook page, DW Africa.
Africa Link Sport.
As usual, every Monday, we treat you to another dose of sports. There were major upsets and wins as African teams intensified their campaign to qualify for the battle for the 2019 Africa Cup of Nations football finals. DW Sports correspondent Samson Omale reports on how the teams performed.
It was a weekend of shocks and victories in the African Cup of Nations qualifying matches. In Nairobi, a 10-man Kenyan team stunned Ghana 1-0 at the Moi International Sports Center to get their campaign in Group F back on track. Despite the win, coach Sebastian Migni felt his team would have done much better.
We have beaten Ghana, and I'm not happy at all. If we achieve a high level, we need to improve a lot of things.
Black Stars coach Kwesi Appiah believes Ghana can still qualify, even though they are now all level with 3 points alongside Sierra Leone and Ethiopia.
We had a lot of chances from the first half to the second half, but it's just unfortunate that we could not utilize any of the chances that we got. I believe Kenya did well, but we, could have done better, with the chances that we had.
After a dismal performance in the World Cup in Russia, Nigeria's Super Eagles managed a 3-0 victory away to traditional minnows, the Seychelles, in Group E. Coach Geno Rao was excited his team delivered the results ahead of their next game.
We did it well, and now we have our 3 points and can prepare quietly our match, 2 matches against Libya. Yes, we are only 1 point behind and we are receiving, so we have to win this game.
In Alexandria, Liverpool ace Mohamed Salah scored twice and missed 2 penalties as Egypt made a dream debut under Mexican coach Javier Aguirre by crushing Niger 6-0. Despite the huge victory margin, Egypt trailed Tunisia in Group J on the head-to-head rule, having lost 1-0 away to the North Africans in the first round 15 months ago. Libya frustrated South Africa to a goalless draw in their Group E Day 2 clash at the Moses Mabhida Stadium in Durban. Coach Stuart Baxter was left frustrated with his side below the par performance.
It was not the best. We can do better. But I thought the players worked very hard to try to implement that.
Uganda and Tanzania played to a goalless draw at the Mandela National Stadium in Nambole in Group L. Both teams missed a couple of scoring opportunities, with Uganda's Joseph Ochaya fluffing his side's best chance after only 10 minutes. The Taifa Stars of Tanzania now has 2 points from 2 games, a welcome development for their newly appointed Nigerian coach, Emmanuel Amuneke.
When you look at the game yesterday, I think the intensity of the game from the beginning to the end was so high. What I can say, and I'm proud with my players.
There are 48 teams fighting to qualify for the African Cup of Nations in Cameroon next year. Only the winner and runners-up in each of the 12 groups will sail through to the finals in Cameroon in 2019.
Samson Omale with that report. And of course, Zipporah, I can see you're excited. What was your surprise? I see a Kenya kind of, excitement.
What do you mean, Isaac? Of course, Harambee Stars beat Ghana. I mean, this is a shock defeat. This is Ghana.
I get you. Your team, Harambee Stars, beat the Black Stars of Ghana 1-0.
Not to mention it was a 10-man team.
Congratulations. Many thanks for that. And of course, that's how we end it. I'm Isaac Mugabe.
And I'm Zipporah Nyambura.
Bye for now.
DW. Made for Minds.